Hello and welcome to the Donor Egg Mama podcast for soul-led intended parents considering a donor egg pathway and parents of donor egg conceived children. I'm your host, Adele O'Connor, a qualified fertility coach and proud donor egg mama. I'm just a normal mum that went on an extraordinary journey to conceive. I hope this podcast helps you in some way to break free from emotional overwhelm, face your fears, and find the courage to move forward and bring that baby that's on your heart into your reality. Let's talk openly about our emotions and all topics donor egg IVF. Thanks for listening. Hello, I'm your host, Adele O'Connor, and welcome listeners to the podcast Donor Egg Mama, where my mission is to lift the veil of secrecy surrounding donor conception and talk about all topics donor egg IVF. My desire is to share real stories from real people creating their family using donor eggs. And today I'm so happy to have the beautiful, open-hearted Melissa Naff with us. And I'll just read Melissa's beautiful bio here. Melissa is a nurse, and her and her husband met when she was in her mid-30s. She's a firm mum to two Great Danes, Roscoe and Priya, and her tortoiseshell Siamese, Nikita. She enjoys reading, crocheting, traveling, and spending time with family, friends, and the dogs. So Melissa's been through quite a big journey. Her journey started in 2018, so it's already spanned 5 years, and she's still in that journey. And what is so beautiful about Melissa and how we connected is that she's such an open-hearted person, and she, you know, she's quite an open book. She's got her own TikTok and Instagram, which you can check out in the show notes, and that's becoming NAFParty_3. And yeah, I'll let Melissa tell you about her inspiration, why she started her own Instagram and TikTok, and why she wanted to do that. But we've connected. It's always lovely to talk to Melissa. She's got, you know, some great takes on the donor egg journey, and she's a really proactive person in not only looking at ways to share the conception story for her future child, but also getting help for herself. So I really wanted to bring Melissa on to have a chat about how she's dealing with her journey as she navigates the donor egg pathway. So Melissa, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you. Thank you for having me today. It's my pleasure.
Oh, you're welcome. So Melissa, perhaps you could just start with the question that I brought up first of all. What inspired you to start your Instagram page?
One, I think, was connection, to find others going through the same thing I was going through. When I first started it, I started following others that I had heard about through other podcasts, you know, because you're like, oh, maybe they have the same similar story. But also the connection with those going through just IVF in general, because at the time I was still young in my IVF journey.
Yes.
When I started following people and looking for support. And so when I went to a private account was when I really wanted to start to share. Yeah. And now it's not private, it's more public. I'm like, people just, even my closer family and friends, they can see it, right? I put most of it out there for them anyway. So I wanted to educate others. Yes. About what I can from what I've learned, and just document my journey for myself and for our future child or children. I mean, I'm a little bit older, so we'll see if there's two in the mix here, but, really it's that, and to help advocate, because, you know, being in the United States, we don't have that mandated for coverage, for insurance. And so I wanted that to be out there too, so that I have that as something helpful.
That's amazing. And I, you know, I love seeing your posts, and you are so open and honest with sharing your feelings, the good, the bad, and the, you know, the difficult feelings, the challenging feelings that are coming up for you. And yeah, how is that received by your friends and families? Is it, I guess it's great, because they just know, they know what's going on, you know, so that helps.
You know, some people understand, And they reach out and they offer support or condolences when it's necessary. I haven't been as open like on my Facebook where most of my friends and family follow me. We have a private group for those who, when we first started our journey, we set up fundraising to help raise the money to pay for our IVF round. So those who donated, and it was a puzzle. So we have a puzzle of a rainbow, and family and friends would donate $10 per puzzle piece, and their names are on the back of those puzzle pieces. And so at some point, because it's not completely full, and we're doing a GoFundMe right now for our next cycle, but it's so I'm adding more names as that happens, but it's to hang up in our child's room, and it's going to be in a clear, like, what is it, a floating frame, picture frame, the puzzle, so that our child can see all the people that really wanted them here. So those individuals are in a private group, and I've been way open with them, educating them on the different processes, because they don't know about a lot of the medical things that we'll probably talk about today as well. But just recently, as we've done the GoFundMe, I've opened that up too and shared my story, and I've gotten condolences and things like that. I posted a picture of my husband. You know how we all find those funny shirts that for us, it means something. And it's the one that was like, I never thought my wife would get knocked up by a doctor. And most people are laughing at it. And I want to comment that it's funny, but it's not funny because of all the emotion that goes into it. So, my immediate family have been very supportive for the most part. My grandmother had her opinions at first about everything. She did help us with our first round of IVF completely. But when it came to donor egg, I was very concerned because she's opinionated. And so now that she's kind of my mother figure in the world, because my mom passed away a year ago this Wednesday, it's hard to talk to her about it a little bit because she has her opinions about, you know, adoption and using someone else's genetics and things like that. So that's the only person that's giving me a hard time. Of course, I am in a mixed race relationship. My husband's Indian. And so they sometimes, they're great. Nobody's really said anything bad, but you know that they don't quite understand it. And like my mother-in-law, bless her heart, on the day that we got our blastocyst report, our PGT report, right? From our donor egg. It was on her birthday, which her birthday is Valentine's Day. And we sent it to her and she's like, oh, so she's pregnant? We had to explain to her yet again, no, she just gave us the eggs that I'm going to hopefully carry this pregnancy. I mean, then that was over a year ago at this point. So for the most part, they've been pretty open and receptive. And
it's really hard. It's so hard, isn't it, to, you know, navigate that, those relationships, knowing that it's so unknown and people, you know, that aren't on a fertility journey just don't understand it. And they've, you know, my own mother was very I'm sure, you know, when I moved forward with donor eggs as well. And it's quite exhausting having to do that education piece, because you've gone through all of the emotions to be okay with it yourself, and then you have to kind of go through that again, helping other people to get there, other people that mean a lot to you in your family. So yeah, it can be really tough.
And so much of the time they'll try to give advice and it's like, you don't understand. I had one individual who we no longer are on speaking terms, and it was my choice, bring up the idea of having gastric bypass surgery. I've gained a significant amount of weight during this process. And there's been a lot of grief, and I know we'll talk about that even in the last year. And so to say that's my answer, because she knows some ladies, I tried to explain to her that I know many other women that did it because that's what they were told to do, and it didn't work for them and still had to proceed with IVF or, you know, donor eggs or surrogacy. And she just wasn't understanding it. And I was just like, that's fine. We don't need to be on the same page. And, but yeah, it's hard because that's shaming, body shaming. And she doesn't know everything that's been going on, you know? So, yeah.
Absolutely. That comes up a lot on the donor egg journey, doesn't it? And you know, often doctors can also add that pressure of saying you've got to be a certain BMI. I know that's true of some clinics overseas. But yeah, it's like another overlay of stress and shame that you really don't need on this journey.
Yeah. Luckily, my clinic has never said anything. Now, I was in a good body weight and BMI when I started and was doing my own egg retrievals, but they've never said a word to me about my weight. So, in any way. So, yeah.
Good. And also, it's tough. You've been through a lot of grief, haven't you? You've had the grief of, you know, going through five failed IUI cycles, dealing with, you know, your husband's low sperm and morphology issues, going through two failed IVF cycles, and not having, you know, anything to transfer, and then moving to donor egg, and it really sadly experiencing a failed transfer and two miscarriages. That's so much to deal with, Melissa. It really, really is.
And then to lose my mom right after that, when we finally made it to transfer and all the glory of that and the stress of the 2 week wait, she kept calling about every other day to check, and she didn't understand that early I wouldn't know if I was pregnant or feel pregnant, but she would call. And the night that she passed, it was my dad, and I was expecting it to be her. And we were 7 days post transfer. So, yeah. And my dad was so worried when I got that negative test that that's what caused it. He didn't understand that. No, that embryo probably would have already snuggled in by that point if it was going to, but it just added to extra grief that day. So, yeah.
That's huge. It's so much to deal with. And how do you deal? How have you dealt with, you know, the death of your mom on top of going through this? Like, I know I'm lots of people out there, I'm sure, you know, sadly, when you feel like you're going through the most stressful thing in your life, then bam, something else happens, you know, to many others. And so I think it'll be really helpful to hear what your coping strategies have been.
At first, I don't think I was doing great. I mean, so when I had to move on to donor egg, my first thought, besides I cried for a couple of days on the couch, right? I went to work, went through the motions, but because luckily in my role as a nurse, I'm not out with the patients all day long. I'm on the phone with patients because I'm a coordinator, like our clinic nurses are. And so I do a lot of education and phone call things. But I just kind of was through the motions while I was still over on the other side, you know, Googling different ways to manage this. And kind of the first thing was, of course, my clinic was pretty proactive in getting me to the clinic therapist because they have clinic therapists. And luckily, the one I had connected with that they connected me with again also has gone through donor eggs. So
Amazing.
that was, yes, very helpful. We've connected pretty well on that. And she really kind of helped my husband understand the process better too. But finding support that helped me. I just had joined Fertility Rally, I think just before my first egg or my second egg retrieval. I had joined the Mind Body Re Fertility Reset with Robin Birkin back the right after my first failed IVF cycle. And then was like, well, I need something that, you know, this other one too. I want to try both of them and see how it goes. And I didn't really join until after this happened, where I got on the phone and or got on the Zoom call and listened. And then I did find Maida Getman right away too, because I was looking for donor stuff and she had this donor download that showed up. So I watched that video and I talked to my husband. And I'm like, you know, she's probably going to help me work through this and us both work through this. And so met with her and joined her stuff. Bought every book I could find, right? And read every book I could find while I was sitting here grieving. And then getting therapy, that's helped. My insurance doesn't cover, well, it doesn't cover fertility treatments, of course, but it doesn't really have mental health benefits either. We get 8 free sessions a year. And those aren't specialists. So I really, because of the cost of seeing a therapist, especially that's specialized, I spread my time out with the clinic one. She's now moved on to being a director of Pinnacle, which fertility, which is bigger in the country, but she's also still in connection with my clinic because they're part of that. And so I use my free ones the best I can. And which is great. That therapist gives me exercises to help with my grief and my anxiety. She doesn't get the fertility part so much, and that's okay. She's a little older. She's never been through it. That's why I have the other one when I need her. So support, journaling, of course, has really helped. Talking to my friends that, I call them friends and family now, right? All of these on Instagram, and I have met many that at least live in the local area. Or the West Coast of the States. And then my dogs and self-care. My dogs are great. We happened to get our first Great Dane because our other dog that passed in January this year, so add that to that list. Him as a friend for her because she was so anxious. And he came at the right time. Like I got him 4 days after my IVF consult.
Beautiful.
So, yeah.
And can you imagine Melissa not having any support? Because I know a lot of people, they, for their own reasons, don't feel comfortable reaching out, are not such open books. Can you imagine not having that support? Like, how has it impacted, how has it changed, helped you having the support that you've reached out for?
I think with my tendency to already be in it, to have some depression and to be a very anxious person, I would be more of a recluse than I already am through this journey. Like I keep myself pretty isolated as it is, especially because of COVID and treatments, right? Like you can't get sick because this treatment will be canceled. I would probably never leave my bed and I probably wouldn't still have my job, to be honest, because I would be that depressed. I mean, one thing I did make myself do the day that I learned I had to go donor eggs was reach out to my primary care physician and say, I need something for depression and anxiety. And then when my
Amazing.
mom passed, he increased it for me. So, because I was like, I'm already increasing it. And he's like, I'll just give it to you at this dose. So, yeah.
And that's so important to reach out and get that support because you might have been, sailed through life, been in control of so many things in your life. And yet, when you're faced with a fertility journey, especially when if it's been going for a few years, all of a sudden you're not in control. This is something we can't control, and that can really increase anxiety and and all of the really difficult feelings that you have to face and work through. It can be tough. So
And
if
not
you
having control is hard, especially when you're type A. And I think a lot of us that do find that support and are more willing to be out there on the social media platforms are very type A. And so to lose control is hard.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And it's a really interesting balance because being that type A personality gives you often that strength and resilience and determination to keep moving forward, even though you keep getting smacked in the face with, loss and failed cycles and all the dreadful disappointments that happen along the way. Yeah, so it can be really hard for type A's to reach out and get support, but I think from Melissa's experience and from lots of other people that I've worked with, it can be life-changing. It can help you so much just to have that support and guidance and not to do this alone, right?
You don't have to do it completely alone. That I mean, I know many women in my support groups that are single mom by choice, and they don't have that support per se. And so to find the support is great that they're out there.
100%. And I also just wanted to ask you about your beautiful husband, because you mentioned that your husband's from has got Indian background. Can you tell us a little about your husband and how this journey has affected him?
He's kind of a quirky closed book when it comes to it, to be honest. I know he's had his moments. I know he's cried because there's days that, like after our miscarriages, he'd go back to work the day that we found out, and they'd send him home. Like, it just, he's a manager of where he works. He's a closing manager because it's like a warehouse for restaurant supplies. And like the regional manager or director ends up coming in, just happens to come in at those times and be like, he's off, send him home. And because he would find, they'd find out what's going on because they know. Also, luckily, our employers have been great about that. But he's been very supportive. He's been usually the one with more positive outlook on it, you know, the let's keep up hope when it comes to like the miscarriages, right? Like the first one where I had the subchorionic hematoma, I and they were like, I don't think it's probably not a viable pregnancy. And it just didn't, things felt differently, of course. And he's like, well, there's still a chance. There's still a chance. And I said, you're right, but you're not in my body. You know, he was trying not to give up. And same with when my HCG dropped. We don't even know what it was, but it wasn't doubling like it should have. And I came in a week after we had stopped doing them for a small bleed, and it had only sat at 800 at that time. And so they knew something was wrong. And that was the second one. And he still was trying to be hopeful. And I said, it's either not viable one way or the other because my numbers didn't do what they're supposed to do, or they dropped and the pregnancy's ending. So yeah, he tries, but he keeps pretty closed and off. He doesn't talk about it a lot. When we went through trying to determine which donor to use, he didn't bring it up and he wouldn't ask any questions. And I asked why, and he's like, I just wanted you to have time to process and wait for you to decide when it's time. Because he knew it was a bit harder on me. I mean, of course he didn't want to go to donor. He wanted to have a child with my genetics, but it's what we have to do if we want to have a child. And so he so much so was concerned about that. And I think I've heard this before. He from others that he was like, let's use donor eggs instead, or donor embryos instead. Like, he was willing to give up his genetics, partly for cost, but I also think because he's like, if you can't, I won't either. And until we talked about it a little bit more.
That's amazing.
Picked up a
That's
lot of
huge.
slack here in the house too. So
Of course.
yeah.
Oh, he sounds like an incredible man. And how's it been for him coming from he's a Fijian, is that correct?
Yeah, they're originally from Fiji. I mean, obviously originally from India at some point in ancestry, but his parents moved here in their teens. So he is first generation American, but yes, from Fiji.
So,
So
in terms of you talked a little bit about your family getting their heads around using donor eggs, what's it been like from his family? You know, obviously being from a different culture, how's that been for them?
Well, I, like, I asked my sister-in-law when we were looking for potentially going to do donor eggs, why, or donor embryos, why we were struggling with that. And she thinks it's more of an educational thing, that it wasn't really maybe a cultural, like religious type of issue. But so far, like, his mom has been pretty supportive. His dad had a few strokes when we first got together 10 years ago. So he doesn't remember who I am half the time. We have to remind him. He thinks I'm his nephew's wife. We're both Caucasian. I have blonde hair, she has brown hair, but that's okay. And my sister-in-law, both my sister-in-laws and a few of his cousins have been very supportive and reaching out. Most of his extended family we haven't heard much from, and we're just now kind of telling more people on that again, that no, that network of my main Facebook page, what we're doing as opposed to elsewhere. And I haven't heard any backlash of like, well, why didn't you just adopt then or something like that? They've just been supportive.
That's
But
amazing.
again, I think I don't understand it completely either. And that's why I'm trying to educate.
Yeah.
So I do get the superstitious kind of like things that, you know, they believe in type of stuff. You know, like prayer, and because they really believe in prayer, and that will help them get things that they want, and a few other things. But and I'm religious, but I'm not super religious, right? I believe, and I don't have to go to church every Sunday, and you know, those kinds of things.
No, I hear you. Well, that's, yeah, it's wonderful that you've got that support. And yeah, you know, it can be hard sometimes with when there's a cultural difference in the relationship. And yeah, that can sometimes add another layer of there's a non-acceptance amongst that culture, but it sounds like you're being really well supported. So yeah, that's
Yeah,
wonderful.
I haven't, like, they haven't asked a lot of questions at all. Like, or, you know, what's your donor look like? Or, you know, why'd you choose who you choose? And we haven't disclosed pictures or anything like that to anybody, but because we do have photos, of course, and we do know her name because we did get to meet her via Zoom, and, you know, those things. But
Okay, well, that leads really nicely into me asking you about your donor and how you chose and what how that was for you. If you could tell me about your donor selection journey.
yeah. I like to say when I started going through this, looking at profiles, because you have to set up your own profile, and my clinic has their own database, so we used that just because that was less fees, right? And our clinic is pretty strict, and so we would have had to have all the testing redone, no matter whether they were vetted through an agency. So that was, I was like, let's just pick somebody through the clinic. But setting up the profile and starting to look through felt like going through Match.com. But at the same time, I correlate it with the real estate market in the Pacific Northwest, especially our area, because so many people are moving in here that houses fly right off the shelf, essentially. And that's what was happening with the donors, because we were looking for blonde donors. And really, I struggled with, doesn't matter what my donor looks like when it comes to hair color and eye color and things like that, because of having that Indian heritage going to be there too, those genetics and how much stronger they're going to be anyway. Potentially, I should say potentially, I guess. But so I think what helped first was reading, working through, sorry, the workbook from Jana Repnow of Three Makes Baby. She has a workbook that's really good. And
Oh,
we sat
yes.
together and answered the questions together about different things. And then, of course, the stuff with the donor down low, because she works through that as well. Your values and those kinds of things. And I took those kind of top five values that she had us work down to, and use those to help determine on that end of what we wanted in a donor. So my mom and I talked about it, and she's like, you just need to find someone who's Northern European. That way there's still some of that heritage. And our donor's 100% English. So, I mean, didn't get the Scandinavian in there, and I'm Scandinavian, and didn't get the German, but that's, I mean, that's okay. So that was kind of the important part. I didn't care too much about height, because I don't think height matters so much when it comes to genetics. I don't, I mean, my mom's got a lot of tall people in her family, and she was only 5'4", you know, like, so yeah. So I w that what was important to us is having that a capability of connecting through the donor sibling registry, so that our child could, if there was ever other siblings out there, connect, but also so we could connect with her in a way if we weren't ever able to meet her for medical stuff, right, for our child, because that, I mean, being a healthcare professional, that's important to know that. And then we liked that she was a school teacher. She's a school teacher, that she's ambitious. She had started a business at a young age. Of course, she's still young, but at a younger age, like barely out of high school. She was a first-time egg donor, so that was a concern for us. And I did reach out to the clinic, and they're like, well, they all had to be first-time at some point.
Yes.
And I'm like, you're right. But what made me feel a little better about it is that she had already had a couple kids and was done with her journey.
Oh, so she's a mom. Yeah,
yes, she's
that's
a mom,
amazing.
so that was helpful, right? Like
Yeah.
to have that kind of sense that she had some positive fertility.
Yes.
And so one within the last couple of years of
Amazing.
donating.
Sorry, may I ask the age of your donor?
She was 25 at the time.
Yeah.
So kind of middle road of the good time, the
Yeah.
good age. Yeah.
Absolutely, no.
Yeah. And then that she was very open about it, just being she was doing it because she wanted to help others. And when we spoke with her, because we did, like I said, got to meet her, when we spoke with her, she was using it to go back to school to become a school counselor. And what sat with us when we looked at her profile, she talked about working with special education kids, those with like autism and behavioral issues like ADHD and oppositional defiance. And we have a few nephews that have those things. And so that was very, that just pulled at our strings a little bit in our heart. So yeah. Yeah. But finding her, she was one of the first ones I hearted, because you heart them to like them, right? But I hadn't had a chance to sit with my husband and look, and many of the other ones kept flying off the shelf. So she and a couple others did not. And finally, I was just like, when do you want to look? And he's like, I've been waiting for you to tell me when you want to look. And so I actually, when he agreed that she was probably the best candidate, I made him hit the reservation button, because I was like, I've done all the other work. You can do something.
Yes, yes.
So I made him do it. It was kind of like signing the papers when you buy your first house or something. Yeah.
Absolutely. It's such an exciting moment. And that's amazing. Your donor sounds beautiful, absolutely beautiful. And I love the fact that you could have a Zoom and have a chat. That's
yeah.
so special. And so in terms of your future child, are you able to have contact in the future?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, we, so she was open to any kind of communication. We didn't do any like legal contract with a lawyer to like, here's your phone number, here's your phone number. With doing the Zoom, that gave us the opportunity to get emails, email addresses. So we do have her email address. She has ours. So like I've sent her one email, and I know that was a long time ago, but she's busy with school. She has two young kids and she has a job. So I was like, it's okay. It was just, I hope things went well. This is what happened. Here's the results at this point. So, yeah.
Sure. Well, that's amazing. Yeah. Amazing. Well, that's a huge part of the journey, selecting your donor. And I know so far you've had three goes. And have they been fresh transfers, did you say, Melissa?
No, they were all frozen transfers. So I
yeah.
tried. One, they were always going to be frozen transfers just because of trying to line things up. I tried one medicated cycle in March of last year, and my body, even though I'm in my 40s and my eggs totally suck, I ovulated through the estrogen and had like a ginormous cyst. So we had to cancel that cycle. So then we opted to do a natural cycle, because my body does still hormonally do a lot of the right things. And my lining's never an issue. And that's the one that failed to
Right.
implant.
Right.
So yeah. Yeah. So they've all been frozen. Just it didn't, they never, my clinic believes in frozen is better.
Yeah. I'm hearing a lot of that. I'm hearing a lot of frozen, it has really good results. So that's amazing. Yeah. So whereabouts are you at the moment in your journey?
So I had that last miscarriage in December, right after Christmas. So we started recurrent pregnancy loss treatments and testing. So far the blood work has been negative. I had a hysteroscopy in the office in February that showed that I had polyps that they hadn't seen on the saline sonograms.
Okay.
So, which I wish I had been anesthetized at that time for that one, and they could have just removed them then. Because it was so painful, my cervix wasn't cooperating to get the scope through. And then So a month ago, I had the second hysteroscopy through with my OBGYN office to remove all those polyps. And again, I had problems with my cervix, apparently. They tried to do just IV sedation and had to put me completely under. I kept twitching. So as they were trying to pass the scope and stuff through the equipment. So now I am in my ERA cycle. So we're doing a mock cycle to test for receptivity, check for endometriosis, endometritis, and any other inflammatory markers. So I am on day two tonight, will be my second night of progesterone and oil shots for biopsies on Friday.
Amazing, amazing. Melissa, I can't believe everything you've been through. You've been through so much, and you're such an incredible person. You share your story. Yeah, you're really open to helping other people, educating other people. You're reaching out and connecting with, lots of people, on your journey. And I think there's a real myth out there that people think that when they go to use donor eggs, they're just going to get pregnant first time.
Yeah.
And that's just not true. Clearly you're living that now. And what's your advice to somebody that's had a miscarriage with a donor egg and is just feeling like, how can I continue on this journey? What would you say to somebody in that situation?
I mean, it's hard, and none of this is a guarantee, you know. IVF, donor eggs, donor embryos, donor sperm, surrogacy. None of it's a guarantee, because it's science. Nothing in science is black and white. It's all gray. I tell people that all the time. I mean, I've been in healthcare for 25 years, so it's I mean, keep going as long as they mentally can keep going. I still can't say it's going to work out for myself, right? But I have five more tries. But keep going and continue to advocate for all the testing that they can get and look for that support to help them, whether that be a support group or a therapist.
Yeah, amazing. So you say you've got five more embryos, is that right? Yeah, amazing, amazing.
We got a lot. Yeah. I mean, I have one friend who had got 15 that lives locally from her donor egg.
Yes, yes. Yeah, that's the incredible thing with using somebody that's frankly a lot younger, generally, and been through health screens and all the rest of it. So yeah, it's wonderful that you've got five embryos there, and wonderful that you've got, your character has so much strength and resilience, even though you obviously have your challenges and suffer with depression. But I think the fact that you reach out for support and you're out there connecting with people is just, obviously really helping you on your journey.
Thank you. I think it has. Yeah. I
Yeah.
don't think just sitting here using my family as support would have been a good thing. 'Cause like, I don't know if I mentioned to you, but when we first announced we were going to be doing IVF and we needed to fundraise, and we mentioned to my sister that the doctor right up front said donor was probably our best option. 'Cause she's very frank and up front and is going to tell you these are your statistics. My sister was like, oh, well, she wouldn't be opposed to helping. So she realized she hadn't had a period in a while and tested just in case we decided to go straight to that and was pregnant. So, you know, it was kind of hard to have her as a support during all of that, because it was like envy or jealousy and a little bit of anger, because she didn't tell me at first because she didn't know how she was going to tell me. And it was months later that I found out. And, you know, so.
That's
It's
huge. That's so hard for everybody. Hard for you, hard for your sister. Just,
She's
timing.
10 years younger, so I mean, you know, like she's a little more fertile, so still at that age. But it was difficult to not have be able to just use family as support, because they didn't understand. And now to have these people, as we like to call it, the tribe, right? They understand, they know, and they get it, and that's what I think everybody should find, is someone that gets it.
Yeah, amazing, amazing. Melissa, I could talk to you literally all day because you're so open-hearted and, very, I just love chatting to you. You've got some real nuggets of wisdom there as well. But we're probably going to have to finish today's episode, but we'll definitely be getting you back on in the future to tell us how, you know, your journey continues. I'm sure everybody listening will be 100% rooting for you and sending their love and hopes and prayers for you, Melissa, as you journey on. And yeah, please follow, give Melissa a follow, and also check out her GoFundMe page, because it's, yeah, so important to support one another and be part of that beautiful future child and that beautiful puzzle that's going to hang in your nursery one day. I absolutely love that. Absolutely love it.
Yeah.
And Melissa's actually really creative. She's got an Etsy store as well with some beautiful t-shirts and scented candles and all sorts of things. So yeah, all of that will be in the show notes as well, which will all go towards helping Melissa on her incredible fertility journey. And she gives us so much. I think sharing her strength and her resilience, you know, I'm sure will give you hope and new strength and new resilience to anybody that's going through something similar, you know, has experienced a loss using donor eggs, and, you know, obviously feeling that massive shock and disappointment when you kind of have that expectation that it's just going to go smoothly. So I really, really am so grateful to Melissa for being so open and sharing her story with everybody, and yeah, giving everybody that help and hope as well. So we'll say goodbye and look forward to speaking soon.
All right.
Okay.
Thank you.
Dear listeners, if you enjoy this episode, you might want to join my free Facebook group called Donor Egg IVF Emotion Support. It's for intended parents considering a donor egg pathway. There are beautiful people there from all over the world, and I'd love to see you there too. If you're interested in connecting or finding out more about the online courses that I offer, all the links are in my show notes. Sending love, and bye for now.